why we turn off autoplay on YouTube, everyone, or else you end up watching videos twice in a row. So, the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons is a global civil society coalition of over 400 organizations in over 100 countries that is committed to prohibiting nuclear weapons. And we've actually been making progress, which is why we're here today. Starting in 2013 and 2014, there were three meetings that we call the Humanitarian Initiative meetings. These were the first time the international community had got together and actually talked about the humanitarian impact of nuclear weapons, looked at whether or not we could respond if there was another nuclear weapons detonation, what would happen, what would be the impacts on men, women, girls, and boys, on the environment, on climate, on the oceans. And what came out of those meetings was there would be no meaningful humanitarian response. The ICRC and every large-scale humanitarian organization agreed there is nothing that can be done in the case of a nuclear detonation. And the risks of a future detonation are unacceptably high, and the harm that would be caused is also unacceptable. More? Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. So in response to these meetings, the UN held an official open-ended working group in 2016 that was an official UN conference. The other conferences were held in Oslo, in Nayarit, Mexico, and in Austria. So they were sort of initiatives put forward by those three countries. And the open-ended working group was the United Nations General Assembly put forward event. That met throughout 2016, chaired by the Thai ambassador. And what came out of that was a report that recommended starting negotiations on a treaty prohibiting nuclear weapons. That report was controversial, and it ended up that Canada and a number of states actually voted against this report and the recommendation to start negotiations. But luckily enough, states participating in the open-ended working group voted for it. So that passed, and it went to the General Assembly in October and November of 2016, where there was a motion to start these negotiations and set up the conferences. And in October, it was passed by with 123 states voting for it. Canada voted against, along with most of our allies in NATO, the United States, Australia, and Russia. Interestingly, India and Pakistan abstained from the vote. India and Pakistan have nuclear arsenals, and North Korea voted for the negotiations. So that means in March of this year, there was the first week of negotiations on what's going to be called the Convention on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. The negotiations are being chaired by the fabulous ambassador from Costa Rica, and there's over 130 states attending these negotiations at the UN in New York. Throughout the week, there was very intense discussions, and on May 22nd, the chair of the conference brought out the draft text. So we now have a draft text on a treaty prohibiting nuclear weapons, and the world is going back to the UN next week, in 3 days, on June 15th, to start a three-week set of negotiations. So what I find the most interesting part about this process thus far is the level of excitement around it. We are seeing levels of engagement by small states that usually aren't listened to or aren't don't participate in nuclear weapons discussions, having a large say, getting their voices heard in ways we've never seen before. We have a wide range of campaigners from around the world participating for civil society. We have ages 18 to 88 in the room, as well as all of the diplomats from every continent working together for this ban. And, of course, I seem to have misplaced the rest of my notes. I got it. Thanks. So what made it possible to get here, because obviously we haven't had much progress on nuclear disarmament for the past 70 years, as some of you have been working on this for decades would know. What happened is we started to reframe nuclear weapons as a humanitarian issue. For a long time, nuclear weapons have been talked about as an arms control issue, as how many warheads does this country have versus this country, and do we have balance for our mutually assured destruction? Like I said, these humanitarian initiative meetings were the first time the actual humanitarian impact of these weapons were to be talked about. So some of the key things that have come out of that was that there's a legal gap around nuclear weapons. All of the other weapons of mass destruction are prohibited. Biological weapons, chemical weapons, toxic weapons, what we call weapons of mass destruction in slow motion, anti-personnel landmines, these are all prohibited weapons. But obviously there's a legal gap here. If it's the closest we have for a prohibition on nuclear weapons is a prohibition on some states developing nuclear weapons, prohibition on proliferation. What we're hoping to do here is that this process will build the norm that nuclear weapons are unacceptable weapons and reduce the prestige around this weapon. And thus far, we are seeing both of those begin to take place. And it's hoped that this will help to jumpstart disarmament by finally stating that nuclear weapons are prohibited. We have we sort of give the impetus for action, perhaps more than we've seen in a long time. So I was going to tell you what's in the draft convention and a little bit about Canada before I hand it over to Steve and Judy to get a little bit more close to home. So the draft convention is actually quite short and simple.
It's
Eight pages right now. We expect that it may be expanded a little and strengthened. But at the moment, we're looking at a very simple text to get this point across. So the draft text prohibits developing, producing, manufacturing, otherwise acquiring, possessing, or stockpiling nuclear weapons. It prohibits the use, testing, and exploding of nuclear weapons. It prohibits transferring nuclear weapons to anyone or receiving nuclear weapons transferred to you from anybody. It prohibits assisting, encouraging any of these banned actions by another state, even if they have not joined the treaty. It includes safeguards brought in from the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency. I was like, all the words are there, I just never get them in the right order to match the acronym. There's measures for states that have want to give up their nuclear weapons in the text. And what Mines Action Canada and myself have been working on the most is there are positive obligations in this treaty, similar to ones that we have in the Landmines Treaty and the Convention on Cluster Munitions. So those positive obligations are towards assisting the victims of nuclear weapons use and testing, environmental remediation on areas that have been seen nuclear weapons used or tested, as well as international cooperation provisions so that states' parties have the ability to ask for help to meet their positive obligations, and also an obligation to help universalize the treaty. So that means going out and talking about the treaty to other states and encouraging other states to join the treaty. So all in all, I was pretty happy with the draft that came out because my focus is on the victim assistance provisions. I have picked apart a number of ways that this can be stronger. So that will be my focus for the next 3 weeks as negotiations move forward. The environmental remediation sections can be strengthened. There's going to be a lot of discussion about transfer and transit coming up. Two of the things that need to be sort of looked at more would be the indigenous rights angle, because most nuclear weapons testing has been done on indigenous land, and there's no explicit mention of the rights of indigenous people in this text. And also there's a, we would like to strengthen the gender aspect of the text, because what we've heard from the humanitarian initiative is that there is a much different impact on girls and women who are exposed to nuclear weapons than there is on men and boys when it comes to reproductive health and that sort of thing. So we feel that the treaty's preamble should mention the gendered nature of the humanitarian impact. There's also some talk about wanting to strengthen the safeguards and verification passages of the treaty as well. The treaty is available online under reachingcriticalwill.org or on the UN website, and I can give the link out later today. Just a little bit on Canada is that Canada voted against this negotiation starting, as I mentioned, and at the moment we are not attending the negotiations. There was a debate in Parliament on Thursday about this, and what was interesting is members of the government were talking about parts of the treaty text they don't agree with. However, if you're not in the room, it's very hard to address those concerns. Canada says that it's premature to be prohibiting nuclear weapons, or that the time is just not quite right. We need to have the world be more secure first. I'm not 100% sure what they mean by secure enough. I'm thinking it's some sort of Shangri-La that we're waiting for. Canada also says that this process, because none of the nuclear weapons states have shown up, they've all been invited, but they've chosen not to attend, that the process is not inclusive. I don't know how it can be more inclusive unless we like physically drag people into the room. Everyone's invited, everyone is welcome. If they don't show up, what's not inclusive, it's just being boycotted. And Canada is focusing on its work on the Fissile Material Cutoff Treaty, which has been going on for a number of years now. But I don't know about the rest of you, but I am capable of doing two things at once. For example, you know, I'm perfectly capable of washing the dishes and vacuuming my apartment on the same day. Not that I do that, but I hypothetically could do both. And I guess the one bright spark part about Canada's boycott of this so far is that we're not quite as extreme as some of our allies. On the first day of negotiations in March, the U.S. Ambassador, Nikki Haley, held a press conference outside the negotiating room with a number of other states. They invited Canada, and Canada did not come, to talk about how they did not like these negotiations happening. And they wanted to make sure that their voices and their objections to these negotiations were heard. It backfired delightfully because it actually meant that the international press covered the negotiations much better than I think they were planning on it. I don't think the New York Times and the Guardian and BBC and Le Monde and all of these newspapers and journalists were planning on covering the talks until Ambassador Haley stood outside them and talked about how, as a mother, she thinks nuclear weapons are bad, but she realizes we need to protect our children. But like I said, Canada did not show up to that protest, so that's my positive on the Canada front. But otherwise, these negotiations are a very huge development for the planet. It's okay. We can clap for that, yes. It's an opportunity to get everyone on an equal footing when it comes to nuclear weapons, make sure every state that has concerns has a voice, and finally say that nuclear weapons are unacceptable. So stay tuned. We have 3 weeks to go, and I fully expect that we will have a treaty ready to go for states to sign on July 7th.